This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Donal Kavanagh on the show with you until 12 noon today. A few of your comments, and Caller says, what about the junction to Duhurry from Fintown, where the junction is too narrow for large vehicles? If you have two HGVs coming in opposite directions at the same time, there is no space. There have already been accidents there. And I do know the junction you're talking about, Caller. The only thing I would say is I think people are probably approaching that junction at about max 20-25 kilometres an hour, because you really have to take that junction slowly, and you're right, it's difficult to see what's coming, and there used to be signs that say warning oncoming traffic in middle of road, and that really counts for that junction too, so absolutely take that point. Why don't they put traffic lights in Fintown? Sadly, children have been killed there before. Well, we heard from Chad that they're looking at putting pedestrian crossings in, but that hasn't been done as of yet. Caller says, I was in Letterkenny on Friday. I saw a man mounting the pavement. Everyone had to go up on the pavement on the new dual carriageway on the Port Road. We've spent so much money and ambulances can't even get through, a conversation we've had on this show on a number of occasions. Lifford, Snorer, Castle Finn, surgeries are so hard to get an appointment. You might want a particular doctor and they'll tell you to ring back tomorrow. Then when you do, there are no appointments available. Caller says, Ballybofey has a pedestrian crossing at the Bank of Ireland corner. It's so dangerous, people run from the Glenfinn Street straight across the road onto the crossing. It's an accident waiting to happen. Now, we have had conversations in the past about that crossing, particularly with Councillor Patrick McGowan and others, because the authorities, the RSA, had a series of experimental crossings to look at potential new ways of organising crossings. And one of the things they did was crossings with just street markings and no other signs. And they were using those in Ballybofey. And there's been a concern expressed about that one before. So my understanding is that now that's being assessed and we'll have to see what happens there. But yeah, there's been a lot of talk about that particular crossing in Ballybofey. Caller says, could someone in authority deal once and for all with large signs which block the view on roundabouts in Letterkenny? Either it's illegal or not, but it makes life more dangerous approaching roundabouts for new drivers. Why turn a blind eye? My understanding is, and I may be wrong here, but my understanding is that Donegal County Council does effectively sell advertising spaces to advertisers on roundabouts, that you can effectively sponsor a roundabout. And you've seen other number of signs on various places, roundabouts and that. So this roundabout is sponsored by Highland Radio News. This roundabout is sponsored by Donal Kavanagh, whatever. Now, those signs should be a certain size and those signs should not be obtrusive. They are legal and they are by arrangement and they are absolutely fine. Other signs are problematic. And if there are other signs causing problems, all I would say is maybe if you were to mention that to the council and report it, and something hopefully could be done about it. Now, Caller, just a thing I want to go through here. Caller says, I want this to be highlighted about the welfare of young girls playing in local clubs. It's about unfair playing time. My daughter had an awful, this is about football, I believe. My daughter had an awful season last year, didn't get to play in some matches or was only on the pitch for a few minutes, 10 minutes at the most. This is happening again this year with not getting on for a match at all and another player, it was the same. It's happening to a few players every game and the best players or favourite players get to stay on for the full match. Now, this is an under-11s league where all players should be given a chance no matter what their skill set and told that if they show up for training, they will get playing time. My child does show up for training and matches and players that don't show up for training get right on for the whole game. Last year, it's getting to the point that my child wants to give up a sport she loves due to coaches not being fair to all players. Being a local club, it's not easy to be able to speak up and say directly about the unfair treatment. Not something I want my name attached to when being discussed. Now, I absolutely, and I will be frank here, I am speaking as someone who, growing up, playing sport was useless. You know, there's the old sort of truism about the picking the team on the playground. Yeah, I'll have him, and then I'll have him, and then I'll have him, and then I'll have him, and I'll have him, and I'll have him. And there's always one poor Lutheran left standing at the end of the session that no one wants, and the two teams nearly fight over which one of them is going to have him. That was me. Now, I absolutely understand where the caller is coming from, because I was the person who didn't get the game and didn't get picked. I was that soldier. And I understand why I was that soldier. I was that soldier because, let's be frank, if to say I wasn't very good is putting it mildly. I wasn't. This is not me being falsely modest. This is me telling the absolute truth. I was not very good. And I suppose a coach has a club, and what the coach wants to do is to win games, and the way you win games is you put on your best player. And I suppose the coach is thinking, if I play Mary or if I play John at under 11s, they'll stay at under 12s and under 13s and under 14s, and then they'll stay into the senior team, and I want them playing. The worry is going to be that if I don't give them their game when they're 11 or 12, they'll go someplace else that will give them their game. And it's a discussion, I suspect, that's as old as time and will continue to be as old as time. All I can say, Connor, is I wish you and your daughter well, and hopefully this will be resolved. It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Now, you'll have heard over the weekend that the Taoiseach, Simon Harris, has been expressing a concern about social media companies and threats made online against himself and his family. Now, the independent group of newspapers has been doing some work on this over the past while. You may have read about this in the Sunday Independent yesterday, and again, it continues into the Irish Independent this morning. A survey carried out by the independent group has found that up to 60 politicians have been targeted by threats of violence. Now, joined by Tabitha Monaghan, who's political reporter with the Irish Independent. Tabitha, good morning.
Good morning, Donald.
Were you surprised when your newspaper's investigations and survey found 60 politicians reporting such threats?
I really wish I would say yes, I was surprised at so many, but actually the reality is that this is so common now. And as you said earlier, it's such a live issue because we're hearing so many reports now of this happening to politicians. I really wasn't that surprised. I think I was surprised that it was threats maybe more than it was abuse, because you hear a lot, and maybe that is par for the course for politicians, that they hear, oh, you're rubbish at your job, or you didn't do X, Y and Z, or you aren't helping this cohort of society. But when you escalate that to threats, and if it's threats of violence or death threats, I think that's definitely a different thing that we're talking about there. So maybe a little bit surprised about the threats, but more generally, you know, I think it shows what way things are going with society and with politicians.
And some of the threats reported to you were very explicit. Talk of guns, talk of hanging. I mean, some of this is very explicit.
Absolutely. And you know, some people didn't. And I tried talking to some politicians, and a lot of them saying they just want to put it behind them. But yeah, like you said, there were some very specific ones. Someone saying that they were threatened with blackmail, threatened to be hanged, threatened with a gun. Some saying that they, you know, their constituency offices were targeted as well. I spoke to Fine Gael Senator Barry Ward, who got a death threat in 2009 when he first ran for local elections in the Dunleary Rathdown constituency. So yeah, they're serious threats of violence. It's very serious what they're getting, but also that there other things that they were saying was, you know, people saying, watch yourself, you know, you better watch your back, we're going to come and get you. So sometimes actually the things that might be more intimidating or more scary is when they aren't explicit, that they're not saying exactly what is going to happen, but that idea of you just better look over your shoulder every so often because we're watching you.
Do the threats tend to be linked with a specific issue? If you vote this way, we're going to, or if you don't vote this way, we're going to, or are they general just threats against the politician in general along the lines of sort of a curse on all your houses?
Yeah, it's definitely both, I think. Some of them were very general, you know, like I said, you know, just better watch yourself. But then what some politicians were saying to me when I was speaking to them for the piece was they A, noticed that it has happened quite a lot more after COVID, but also in terms of the homelessness issue and the immigration issue. So they might say that they had, I think one politician said to me how they felt it was transpiring was that they had a particular frustration with how things were being handled. Maybe that they felt that the Irish weren't being housed and we were housing immigrants. And they had that issue. And in order to vent their frustration, that was leading to a threat. So a number of politicians said that the immigration issue was causing a lot of what we were seeing now.
In terms of the 60 that reported threats, 52 of them reported those to Gardaí, and that does suggest that they were taking those threats very seriously. We've all had someone say, "I'll kill you." You know, we've all had a passing, "I'll kill you," or whatever like that, or "I'll break your legs if you don't." You know, we've all heard that, but almost in a jocular fashion. It's clear that of that 60, at least 52 thought it was serious enough to go to Gardaí.
And maybe actually, you asked me earlier on, was I surprised by the numbers who had responded to say that they had received a threat either in person or online? I actually think that was the bit that surprised me the most with the survey, is the number of politicians that deemed the threat serious enough that they felt that they had to go to the Gardaí. And exactly like you said, a lot of the politicians are saying at this stage, which, I mean, I don't think is acceptable, is that these threats are par for the course now. It's just part of the daily job. A lot of them, I mean, have said to me, but also I kind of got the sense that they're a bit desensitized from what these threats are. But like you said, 52 of those surveyed said that they did either report it to the Gardaí, or at the very least, they sought advice. So that mightn't mean that they necessarily said, OK, I want you to formally investigate this now. It was more, OK, what do you think? Do you think this is serious? Because this has maybe slightly rattled me, or this is something a little bit more than what I usually see. So it shows how serious some politicians feel like they have to take these things. And, you know, a lot of people who I spoke to saying that they were satisfied with how the Gardaí had handled it, you know, a lot of the time, thankfully, that they would investigate it and say, look, there is nothing to worry about. But yes, they are taking it so seriously that they do have to report it to Gardaí.
A caller says a person that made threats against Simon Harris is alleged to have done so on a phone from prison and is currently in jail. Why is the mainstream media not highlighting that fact?
We've seen that reported in the media before.
Yeah, my first thought is, if the mainstream media isn't highlighting that fact, how do we all know it?
I think what the issue is that we are highlighting this because it seems there's a perception that it is getting worse.
Yeah.
And I think because we're coming up to a general election as well, a lot of politicians that I spoke to, the Ciaran Comhairle as well that I spoke to for this piece, Sean O'Friel, there's an idea that if this is getting worse, what is this going to do with those who decide to participate in public life, to become public representatives? So though obviously the ones that are involved in politics now, there's many of them, like the survey revealed, that are receiving these threats. But are there other people out there that have kind of thought about running for election now, but maybe they see that this is the case and they don't want to get involved anymore? And I think it's important to note that these threats aren't just impacting the politicians themselves. Some of them will say it's unnerving. Some of them will say, oh, look, I don't pay attention to them. But it might involve their families, or it might scare their families, or it might scare their staff. And I know one politician that I spoke to said they will get these emails into their constituency office. And that politician or that TD mightn't be the first person who reads that email. There's a member of their staff who are reading those first. So that's really scary for that person as well, who has to make a judgment call about how serious that is.
I'm very conscious of not putting two and two together and getting five. But one of the things that's been highlighted over the past while is that a number of TDs, particularly TDs linked with Fine Gael, are not standing again. I think it's more than 20 members of Fine Gael aren't standing.
Yeah.
Now, I don't want to say this is a truth and that's the truth, therefore they're both linked. But it does beg the question, is there a possibility that in some cases there is a link?
I would say that it might have factored into part of someone's reasoning for that. And it was actually something that I did speak to a number of Fine Gael politicians that aren't going to be standing in the next election. And a lot of them did say that it was family reasons, that, you know, the political life is so demanding that, you know, if you are where you are in Donegal now, you have to travel down to Dublin and you're a lot of time away from your family, a lot of time away from your constituency and those that you are representing. But there is definitely an idea that there's an increased toxicity in political life. So it mightn't necessarily be threats, but it's, like I said earlier, that abuse and that rhetoric that's getting worse. And definitely social media is having a massive impact on that. I know, again, I referenced the Ciaran Comhairle. As part of the piece, he said to me that, you know, at one stage, you know, constituents or the members of the public might have been really unhappy with politicians because for whatever reason, and they'd have a chat with their neighbours about it, you know, on the road, or they'd be in the pub and they'd have a chat about it and they'd be giving out. But now social media has enabled people to reach greater audiences, and that level of toxicity, I mean, I think we all know at this stage there's been so much conversation about, you know, what's going on online and the regulation about what's going on online. And I think there's no doubt that, I'm sure, the toxicity and what's going on social media and the threats and the abuse did play into those decisions, maybe on a small part. It didn't have to be the one and only reason. But, yeah. You know, if you're looking for reasons to leave, no doubt that it would say, OK, I'm kind of done with this now.
Fiona Sheehan has a very interesting article in today's Irish Independent where he's effectively saying to the Taoiseach, Simon Harris, and others, look, over years, you bent over backwards to bring social media companies into Ireland and make it as easy as possible for them to operate with as much freedom as possible in this country. Good luck putting that genie back in the bottle.
Absolutely. And you know, the Taoiseach was out last week and he was asked about this because obviously those big social media companies, they're big employers here in the country. Thousands of people are employed by those companies. So there was a question as, is Ireland afraid to go really hard on these companies because we are reliant on them for the corporation tax or because they are an employer? And the Taoiseach absolutely refuted that. And he said, if those companies are dining out on the idea that Ireland is not going to come for them and really come down hard on them when in terms of online safety, that they have another thing coming, essentially. So I don't know. I think it remains to be seen. And I did read the piece by Fiona, and there is a lot of questions as to what will happen. But we do have Comisión na Mban now that's been set up, the new watchdog. But we also have this online safety code, which is going to be published at the end of the year. So we don't know exactly what's coming in those, but Comisión na Mban is going to be responsible for enforcing those regulations and those codes. Part of what we could see in that is significant fines for companies that don't adhere to the online safety code. Also, what the Taoiseach was saying last week, which was interesting, is how liable executives within those companies are going to be in terms of not upholding the safety code as well. And so I think we have to wait and see to see exactly what those guidelines are going to be and if Comisión na Mban will have the teeth to be able to enforce them.
Before I let you go, one final question, Tabitha. I have to ask you as a political reporter. Simon Harris and Micheál Martin, both adamant still it seems that the general election is going to be in March. Pretty much everybody else pretty much sure it's going to be in November. What's your own take on that?
Oh my God, it's funny. I think any of the politicians that I've spoke to, they're obviously on the Dáil recess at the moment. So they'll probably take 2 weeks off for that. But there's definitely a sense that they're starting to knock on doors there. They're getting out in the constituency. So I think it's a fool's game to be guessing at this stage whether or not they will go to the polls this side of Christmas or not. It's really hard to say because, like you said, the Taoiseach has been so adamant that it will run the full term to March. And I think it'll be interesting to see if he goes back on that now, this side. I think we have to get all eyes at the moment are definitely on the budget. And then it'll be more what happens after the budget. We might have a better idea.
I bet you're ready for a November election, though.
We all have to be ready for an election in November. I think, like you said, so many people are assuming that it could be this side of Christmas. So, you start getting ready. If the politicians are getting ready, then I suppose we better too.
Tabitha Monaghan, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. Tabitha, the political reporter with the Irish Independent, thank you very much indeed. Just a few of your comments before we go to a break. Camogie, Cora says, gutted for underdogs Galway in yesterday's Camogie final. Played their hearts out and lost to a goal thrown in by a Cork forward. Some of the chopped down tackles and pullbacks on their forwards in the closing stages would have been frees in hurling. Teams deserve fair and consistent refereeing. I'm going to keep this to one side because I think we have Brendan Devaney coming in a little bit later on, as he so often does on a Monday, and I'll have a quick chat with Brendan about that one as well. Caller says 99 of refused asylum seekers are still in Ireland, new figures show. Do you think Ireland will enforce any fine? These migrants were invited here by Roderick O'Gorman and Helen McEntee and are left in tents and treated humanely. This all fails with the government and their greed. Another caller says, is it not time that we expelled Dana Elrich, the Israeli ambassador, from our country? According to UN expert, Israel has committed genocide on multiple occasions in schools, hospitals, refugee camps, etc., including the murders of over 140 people at the weekend. Months ago, Micheál Martin castigated Sinn Féin on their stance regarding Israel and said diplomacy was the only way forward. Does anyone really think that that's working now as the genocide figures climb to above 40,000? So asks a caller. Just want to go through a statement that we got from Bus Éireann. There was a discussion on the programme last week about school transport. And there's going to be a lot more discussion, I suspect, about school transport over the course of the coming weeks, as there inevitably is in the month of August. Statement from Bus Éireann. Bus Éireann operates the school transport scheme on behalf of the Department of Education. The purpose of the scheme is to provide transport for children living remotely from their nearest school. Safety is a core value for Bus Éireann and is our first priority in all operations. Our local school transport office in Donegal continually reviews the operation of school transport services in the area and actively monitors and improves service performance, with safety being the key priority. The Bus Éireann local school transport office will continue to engage with schools in the area and parents in relation to the current operation of all school transport services. Following the payment closing date of 7th of June 2024, the Bus Éireann local school transport office in Donegal is reviewing all applications for school transport for the coming school year, and tickets are being issued in line with the guidelines of the scheme. That's a statement to us from Bus Éireann. 29 minutes to 11 o'clock. We'll take a short break back after these. And we're going to be discussing vacancies within secondary schools in Donegal. And without further ado, I think we can go to Zoom because concern is being expressed about this issue by the Teachers Union of Ireland. And Joe Higgins is the executive TUA member in Donegal. Joe, good morning.
Morning, Donal. How's it going there?
It's going very well indeed. Thanks indeed for speaking to us this morning. There are over 330 vacant teaching jobs at secondary schools across the country, and the department, you believe, isn't doing enough to tackle what's becoming a serious teacher shortage crisis.
Well, look, we've looked at this and we've examined it. We've carried out surveys on it. Like, we carried out a fairly recent survey, and of those who responded to the survey, 51%, you know, felt a bit disillusioned with their profession, which isn't a good sign. And they reckon they would leave Ireland to teach in another country. Like, many have gone to Dubai. Many are going to where there is, you know, permanent pensionable work. In Dubai, it's tax-free. It's very hard to turn it down. We had an austerity measure in 2009, which gutted the profession in terms of posts, in terms of getting permanency. You know, the CIDs, the golden ticket now, we're looking at, you know, some of these people might not come back. And if they do come back, we've also issues with getting them incremental credit. If you teach for 10 years or 15 years abroad, you come back from certain countries, you might not get, you won't get it. You won't get that incremental credit added onto the scale here. You know, it is an issue. Like, we have a plan. We want certain things that will make this profession more attractive. For example, we want a PME reduced from 2 years to 1 year. Like, 2 years is just simply too long at the minute. We are halving our potential supply of teachers in all subjects. It's also costing a huge amount of money. Like, parents are really, really stretched. Like, it's €17,000 to do a PME, and that's before accommodation. You could be out the guts of €30,000 a year to do a PME. Plus, if it was reduced from 2 to 1, that teacher comes out after year one, goes straight into a job, please God, with that, where they may earn 40-odd thousand euro. Like, it's saving them €50,000.
Now, just for the listeners, just remind us what a PME is.
A PME is a postgraduate master's in education. Yeah. It replaced what used to be the higher diploma, the HDIP. HDIP,
yeah. So the PME is the new HDIP, yeah.
It is.
Now, one of the not ironies, but one of the almost contradictions here is, on the one hand, we have a teacher shortage in many areas, including Donegal in the northwest. On the other hand, permanent posts are not being offered. And what the government is looking to do is to get temporary teachers in, and a teacher in Donegal could find themselves being shunted between Aran Mór, Moville and Bundoran with very little say in what's happening. And that's the problem.
Yeah, look, it is an issue. Like, to be fair, if you're the ETB, they have to fill their, you know, they have to go where the needs are. There has to be a level of flexibility. It's not a case where you're simply bashing, you know, those who run the schools. It's not that at all. Some schools have needs. You know, children in Torrey Island need to be taught. Children in Armagh Island need to be taught. Children all over Donegal need to be taught. But we, as a teaching union, our job is to look out for the pay and conditions of our members, and we want more permanent positions for them. We don't want them going many years without the hope of a permanent position, because what happens is they get disillusioned. They'll go, do you know what, like, as part of that survey, almost a third felt that they wouldn't be in the profession in 10 years time. I would not like to see the teaching profession in Ireland become what it has become in England, whereby they cannot retain their teachers. They're actually paying younger teachers almost as soon as they come out of their PGCE to stay in the profession. They give them so much money as an incentive to stay in the profession. And I don't want that here. I think we have a really, really good profession. We have teachers who take a great deal of pride in what they do and always have done. And I would like to see that maintained and improved upon if possible. And I think it is possible.
One of the warnings that's come out in recent days is that schools may now find themselves limited in the subjects they can offer. And someone who perhaps might have been able to choose a language or choose to do a myriad of subjects may find that choice limited by virtue of the fact that the school they're going to simply does not have the teaching staff to teach that subject.
That's possible, and it's probably already happening. You see in parts of Dublin, and I wouldn't say that it wouldn't be beyond the realms of possibilities in Donegal either, whereby down the line, if you cannot get teachers for certain subjects, whether it be the languages or just say geography, history, whatever, like we're introducing new subjects as well, which as part of the new senior cycle reform, you know, those new subjects are going to need teachers as well. If we cannot fill those positions, we are not doing the children and the parents, you know, we're not giving them the service they deserve, the services that their taxes are paying for, you know. And I would feel very strongly that, you know, teaching is a job that deserves the maximum, because without education is the key to everything else that comes in a young person's life. And we have served our students, and we've served many of the parents of this country very, very well. And I don't think there's anybody that's arguing against this. It's just finding the mechanisms by which this can all be done. Like within the schools in Donegal, like some schools back in the day, I remember my old school, they used to share resources. I remember students who couldn't do honours maths in their school come up to a school to do honours maths, but their school offered a chemistry or home economics, and those students went down there. But that takes organisation and timetabling. But you're still operating on a shoestring. And part of the 2009 austerity, teachers were expected to do a lot more with a hell of a lot less. Yeah. And we're still fighting that fight now, even today, so many years later.
And there's still talk about people, like you hear teachers say from time to time, I'm doing my Croke Park hours, and there's been various agreements. And as you say, they were, I see the smile on the face. You know exactly what I mean when I say that.
In my role here, the amount of queries I get on Croke Park is just, and look, I'm not going to deny it. We hate them. Because we were really hit. You know, it was almost like, see those teachers, they're off so many months in the year. But then the people that say that to me in June or July or August, they never say it to me in January or February or March. You know, the Croke Park hours were almost, I felt at the time, was like we had to give productivity. And we did. Like our parent-teacher meetings are after school, our staff meetings are after school. And that didn't even take into consideration the fact that teachers give so much outside of this classroom. Teachers take sports teams, evenings, dark mornings. Teachers give up their lunch times. And like my wife is an art teacher, and like you would look at the amount of work that they would do in terms of helping students with their projects. Like I know teachers have gone into school during their Easter holidays. I know that teachers give over and above, given evenings, given weekends. You know, the initiatives like Junk Couture, teachers give a hell of a lot. And I think if a teacher sat down and did an audit, maybe over the course of a teaching career, on what they did over and above, you know, and they don't look for rewards from it. You know, we have issues with posts and posts. Like we had over 50% of teachers had a post before 2009. Now it's about a third. You know, that has to change. And it's down the line, if you don't have post holders prepared to do it, we have a situation now where some post holders are giving up the posts. They're not, like, forget about the money. They just want a greater quality of life that doesn't involve doing a post, you know, which is giving up their time, because many of them have, like everybody else, people have families, people have priorities in their life. They like to be home with their kids in the evening, you know, after a day's work, rather than maybe be still in the school to maybe 6 in the evening and then maybe travel home.
In terms of the recruitment, and it's hard to always sit down and identify one main issue, but it seems to me that one of the big issues as far as you're concerned is the path to permanency and the offer of a permanent post. Now, as you say, within ETBs in particular, there may be, I mean, and are there perhaps, you know, ways that the ETB can be imaginative and perhaps employ some teachers on the basis that they may be mobile and may go from school to school if necessary, but make a provision where that can be done on a permanent basis with travel expenses, etc., that it's not just done on a wing and a prayer. Are there ways for the TUI, ETBs and the department to sit down and figure out imaginative ways to allow the day-to-day problems to be resolved while also addressing the needs of teachers for permanency and for consistency?
Well, I think DTB have always probably been doing it, to be fair to them. They have been, you know, teachers have sometimes worked between two schools and three schools, you know, in fairness to them, where the travel has been doable. You know, it's a credit to them that they're doing that. It's harder in community comprehensive schools because if I teach in Carrindown Community School, the nearest community comp to me is probably going to be maybe PCC in Fulcara. Unless you have a helicopter or a boat,
yeah,
you're not going to get there. This voluntary secondary schools I mentioned, they do cooperate every now and again where the timetabling and the subject allows. It's more difficult to do that. It's probably years since my experience of it when I was at the college.
And I think it still does happen between St Eunan's and Loretto in Letterkenny. It still does.
I think it
may still do for one or two classes now. I know it certainly did when my daughter was there. It happened.
It used to be cooperation with chemistry, maths, home ec and stuff like that, music, where it was possible. And look, sometimes that needs to happen. But in the ideal world, these schools would all have all of these facilities themselves. And I know in smaller schools, like, you can't expect a small school to offer every single subject in, you know, offer every single language. It's impossible to do it depending on the school. Now, some schools are excellent. They'll offer two and three languages. Most schools offer two. But look, it's a logistical issue. It's one that the department, and particularly deeper, because they control the purse strings. Everything has to go through them. Like, we are looking for example, we want things like the island allowance brought back. We would love to see the island allowance brought back, teaching through Irish allowance, SEN. We would like to see a lot of those allowances brought back for teachers who are working in those areas. Like, I believe that it would be a fabulous thing. Like, we have teachers going to Ardmore Island, and we have teachers in Torrey. We have teachers working in the Giltock. Like, the area I represent is the whole of the west coast of Ireland. We have Connemara. Like, you have the Aran Islands. Giltock area is there. Those teachers, I think, deserve those allowances back. No question at all. They're providing a great service. They're keeping the language alive, as do the teachers who are teaching in the Gaelscoil, you know, and Gaelhollachta all over the place. So, look, we're all for those being reinstated, but look, it's all about getting circular letters from the minister, and this is an election year, and hopefully, you know, we're going to get more.
Are you confident or despondent with regards to the future? Because we know, even to this day, and we've had it already, people talk about 08, 09 and the cuts that came into place then, and they still haven't been restored. And it seems that we're now, 16 years later, and there's still speak of restoration, even to get back to where we were in 09. Are you confident that we'll be able to do that and then move forward in a way that addresses contemporary needs while also meeting the needs of teachers?
Well, I think we have to move forward anyway. There's no point in standing still and constantly looking backwards, because we'll not get anywhere. You know, like, you mentioned the Croke Park hours to me, and I look, come here, they're the bane of everybody's life, and I'm probably, when I put this phone down now, probably I'm going to get teachers saying to me, what are you going to do with those Croke Park hours? If we want to get rid of Croke Park hours as teachers, we have to unwind every deal that we've done in terms of pay restoration and pay raises. So that's easier said than done. That could only end up being an issue to me if the country went off an economic cliff again, and then we're back to square one and nobody wants to go there. I would imagine that, personally speaking, we're going to be pushing on with improving, you know, we want to improve, like, we're going to say improve teacher pay, but we also want to improve teacher conditions. We want to improve student choice, parental choice, and all of that includes, you know, improving the overall service. That means we get more posts, which means we get the allowances back to create levels of enthusiasm. We get the incremental credit back so that those teachers who are coming, we want our teachers to come back from abroad and work in Ireland. But at the same time, we can't have them coming home from maybe permanent jobs, getting tax-free money, then to turn around and be maybe 4 or 5 years. Because like this is a big issue. They won't get a mortgage. They have to come back in Ireland, all right. If they come back with a lot of money and they can afford to pay cash, great. But if they need mortgages, banks are going to look and say, well, sorry, you don't have a secure employment there. We're going to turn you down for a mortgage. And like, I'm looking at Dublin. Like this is where it's become national. What's to say down the line Letterkenny wouldn't continue to grow? Letterkenny might not become an easy place for a teacher to get a place to stay in or afford rent in the years to come either. You know, big towns everywhere are having the same issues. Dublin, acutely so. But, you know, I'm not saying that it wouldn't become the reality in Letterkenny. Letterkenny has not become a smaller place.
And defective blocks potentially complicating things even more in Donegal.
Well, I spoke on that last year at our Congress and, like, you nearly feel a sense of shame. I'm living up here in Glencar and I'm lucky enough, I think, that my house isn't defective. I'm pretty sure it's not at this stage. It's up long enough. But if I look out the window out of my kitchen, I'm looking at the biggest potential building site in the county up in towards the top of Glencar. And when those houses do start to come down, these people are going to have to somewhere to live. Like, that's not going to make the price of property go down. It's going to go the other way. And I know it's small potatoes, really, but we have teachers in those houses too. And it isn't just, you know, everybody deserves a house to live in. And I know TGI get a bit of grief at times because we're told that we're too political and we're, you know, we have very, very strong stances on Gaza and we have very strong stance on MICA housing and the rest of it, you know. But teaching is about people as much as it ever is about subjects. So I think down the line, you know, teaching as a profession, I'm very confident. I have a daughter who's decided that she wants to go into it. And she's made a very firm decision. She's doing a PME now starting in September. You know, I believe it's very strongly it's a very worthwhile profession to go into. And I would promote it, you know, because at the end of the day, if we don't have good teachers, you know, the future will not be as bright. And that is my very strong view in it.
And that, I think, is a really good place to leave it. Joseph Higgins, TUI, thank you very much indeed.
Thanks, Donald.
Thank you, Joseph. Take care. Bye-bye. I'm joined on the line by James Daly, who is from County Meath. James, good morning.
How are you doing, Donald? Is it Donald?
It is indeed, Donald. Great to talk to you, James. Now, you are a veteran of the Air Corps, and you joined the Air Corps along with a man from Donegal with whom you've lost contact, and you're trying to re-establish contact. Tell us the story.
That's exactly right. Well, there were 38 of us from all over the country, every part of Ireland practically. In 1964, the 10th of September 1964, we joined the apprentice school in Baldonald. We did our apprenticeship there, and then we moved, as they called it, up camp. We went to different departments and that sort of thing. But around about 1970, we started to leave. So there were people going abroad. There were people going to Aer Lingus. There were people going to British Airways. Some of them went to Germany. Some went contracting. So basically, we all sort of went our own. We were all young lads, so we were only 16, 17 in 1964. But in any case, there was a few attempts made over the years to try and get them together for a reunion. And finally, one of the lads, Nicholas Gay, he took it by the scruff of the neck and, there early on the year in January. And he says, look, I'm going to try and find these lads because on the 10th of September coming up, it's the 60th anniversary of the day we joined the Air Corps in Baldonald.
And there is one person in Donegal you haven't yet been able to contact.
There is three people altogether that we have lost contact with, well, that we are not able to contact with. Unfortunately, 15 of that class has passed away. And we have 17 definite people who are coming to the reunion, but we're missing three. Now, one of them is Michael. He was from Dublin, and the other was Tom Fitzgerald. He was down Tipperary way, and the other was Sean McIntyre. Now, there was also another chap, Eddie Dalton, who was also from Donegal. Now, unfortunately, that chap passed away some time ago. But Sean McIntyre, he left the Air Corps. I'm not actually sure how many years he did in the Air Corps, because I left in 1970. So I only spent 6 years in the Air Corps. I had to buy myself out. And at that time, you signed on for nine years. But because they train you and all that sort of stuff, you either have to do the 9 years to give back service to them,
but
or you can buy yourself out.
We understand Sean worked for a while with Aer Lingus in the 80s and 90s.
Sean went to Aer Lingus. And, I'm not actually quite sure. It would have been probably around 2000. It could be 99, 97, 98, 99, 2000. He did say to me, I was an Aer Lingus myself, and he did say to me that he was leaving. He was going up to some company. Now, I assumed this company would be in Derry because basically they were going to build a hangar to paint aeroplanes. Now, basically, there isn't any place in Donegal where you would land jet aeroplanes for spraying them. Now, he would be a part of a management team or would certainly be in planning in that particular job. So I don't actually know where this place is, but now, of course, he would be, I'm 77, I was one of the oldest of the class, he would be around 76, I think he was a bit younger than me.
Right.
He would be retired. I assume he went back to Donegal and is retired in Donegal. So if there was anyone who might know Sean McIntyre, we actually called him Johnny as well, Johnny McIntyre, but Sean McIntyre was his name, and retired in Donegal, any of his siblings, or maybe some of his family. Yep.
Well, we will certainly, we'll put the call out there, James. So we're looking for Sean McIntyre, also known as Johnny McIntyre, joined the Air Corps in 1964. We know that Sean did work for Aer Lingus up to around about the 99-2000, and then he came back to the Northwest, we understand, to manage a company that was painting airplanes. So if anyone knows Sean, or indeed if Sean himself is listening, we'd love to hear from you, and we'll put Sean in contact with you, James. Listen, we wish you all the best with it, and hopefully we'll be successful, and we'll have some news for you before too long. But in the meantime, James, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us, and we'll see what we can do.